Crusoe, welcome to another podcast, Pildroid. Here we are upstairs in the Cricketers Pub on Cathedral Road in Cardiff. We've got a pint. Drinking the things. Is it the Evans Brewery Warrior? Available on the website is conversation I had via Skype with Raphael Geller, who almost feels of this parish, the amount of contact and interaction we've had with him as fans over the last couple of weeks. I know many of you sort of met him as well in Israel as well, spoke very highly of Welsh fans in the conversation I had with him recorded via Skype last week over the Easter break. So that's available on the website. Also gone live is our blog, a debut piece by myself about those players who are called up by Wales or who have been called up by Wales but were never called upon. So they ended their career without ever winning an international cap. So then that's available on our website, and encourage you to take a look at that. And there'll be some other pieces coming up very, very soon, taking a look at international programmes, 30th anniversary of Wales beating Spain 3-0 at the racecourse, a couple of other pieces as well. So hope you can find your way there and take a look at those. Welcome, gents. Who's still on cloud nine then? I think I still am. Do you want to introduce yourselves again? We don't have Leon, but it's Russell.
Gareth.
Daniel.
Rich. And I'm on cloud 10.
Wow, there is a cloud 10.
There is, I'm on it.
Is that one Brian Adams sang? No, that was still close to cloud 9, I think. It got a bit surreal at about sort of 70 minutes, just thinking, because usually games are 70 minutes, but during the Toshak, we were just hurling balls into the channels for Bellamy to sort of chase after. He'd get them, he'd look over his shoulder. We're all still just crossing the halfway line. Carl Robinson's thinking, well, what do you want me to do? And it was just effortlessly easy, which sounds very arrogant and a bit disrespectful, I suppose. And it's not meant to, but that's basically what it was.
They were really poor, surprisingly poor, weren't they? We kind of talked a lot about them before the game. We'd had Raphael on, and that kind of left me a bit worried as well. He talked very positively, like they expected something really good, but they offered nothing, you know. It was interesting to see what he said when you spoke to him the other day. He knew they were going to lose within 12 minutes, and you can see what he was getting at when Bale goes through and he drags that shot.
And we've been there.
Yeah, absolutely. he just must have recognised that within those first 10, 15 minutes, you could see what they were going to do, just kind of back off a little bit, give us all that space to play in their third. And we never get allowed that.
And if you could plot Bale's confidence on a graph in that first half, that pull shot, it just grew. And he had another couple of sort of just to get his eye in, taking people on, and you just saw that just increase.
Fair enough. I texted in tournament ticket friend who was internationally during the game, and he was watching it. And even in the run up to half time, just before the Ramsey goal, we were saying, like, Bale's not been that good. He's not quite been at it. I wonder if the whole Real Madrid thing is not his confidence. And I kind of watched it again, and actually, it's much more like what you say. It's not really that he was playing badly in that early part. We were looking for him to do so much that maybe the expectation goes up. But once he'd got his kind of eye, and once he kind of had a bit of time on the ball, he was just unstoppable after that.
What Israel really reminded me of was how, for example, we might have played against Germany maybe under Toshak or something. They were just so placid. They kind of, there was no kind of attempt to kind of get in our faces, disrupt our pattern. And in a similar way, I think we played like a kind of a classic or sort of a recent classic German side, where we were like really efficient in possession. And we kind of, I don't think we went through the motions. I think we played a really strong game and won. And it was just a natural thing to happen. Like, I remember at the time we were watching it in the halfway in Cardiff, and people were saying, oh, we're playing these brilliant kind of through balls and slide rule passes. But actually, that was possible because the gaps between their players were so big that they weren't compact in midfield at all, which is a bonkers strategy to play against us. And they looked clueless. I know Raphael was kind of blaming the players, but they didn't seem to have any concept or idea of what to do at any point.
No, I agree. And I thought, having spoken to Raphael the first time, which when you and I did, he was talking about how they want to play high tempo, they'd want to press, they would look to try to protect the defence by almost not exposing the defence and just wanting to keep possession. And I thought, okay, well, you know, like you said, Gab, you know, a bit of a, you know, tough game on our hands here. They seem to want to push up and press on, not with any tempo, as you say, quite placid. But the defence just went, well, hang on, we're staying back here, because if we push up, Bale is going to just kill us. Robson Kanu as well, perhaps. But I mean, Bale obviously was a threat. Not a surprise there. And as you say, it just left acres of space. And they just didn't seem to adjust that, because it was apparent really early on. And you'd think either the coaches do something to tactically to adjust that, or they tried and the players just didn't trust it or whatever. But the defence just sat back and just invited them on.
And they didn't learn. I mean, in the first... twice, Allen and Ledley once each, and possibly there was another one from Ledley as well, turning the ball over quickly in midfield and moving it really quickly, and they must have realised at that point, 5 minutes in, that was going to be no good. We were kind of doing what, well, they should have been doing. They should have been getting stuck in the midfield and moving up or forward quickly and getting their Zahavi or whoever on it, but it just seemed to not be, they weren't interested, but they just didn't seem to know what to do.
I thought as well, when I made this point, so again, when I sort of labour it, made it with Raphael, that Damari going off just before half time, then us scoring on the stroke of half time, from what is a really poor goal to concede. I mean, it's just a hopeful punt up. Their centre half gets beaten in the air by Bale. It was just poor. Raphael slated the goalkeeper for his positioning. Not unreasonably. Bit of a sucker punch. Then two pretty calamitous yellow cards. I mean, so calamitous, you begin to feel sorry for him. There was nothing he could do. Those are things, that catalogue of bad luck, poor judgment, whatever you want to, usually happens to us. And it was just refreshing for it to be happening to another team.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad luck, though, was it? That was the way they were playing, just like we talked before. That was always going to happen. Bale was going to be running at the edge of that area time after time after time. If you set up like that, you were going to have to foul him.
And I think you're right, Raphael said he shouldn't have played Damari from the start because he's not fully fit. Though, I don't know, I think previous correspondence with Raphael, I was led to think that he's the danger man. So I don't know, maybe there's a little bit of revisionism on his part there. Who knows? But no matter how well we played, I think to a certain extent, things went our way as well. I thought the referee was really, really good. Protected our players. I think I'm right. I've called up the website. I'll double check.
No bookings.
We didn't have any. You beat me to it. Which we've talked about in the past, and I think that's actually a real plus point as well.
We didn't really need to put a proper tackle in, though, did we? To be honest, I mean, they were so passive. We didn't really ever have to get stuck in, so the chances of us getting booked were quite remote.
Should I be unnecessarily pessimistic and say that means if Ledley or Allen get booked against Belgium, they miss the next game in September?
Yeah, well...
But they're available for Belgium, then.
Is that more important?
It's just those little plus points, and as you tot it all up, you just think, crikey, I mean, what are the negatives? What are the valid criticisms? The passing was a little bit sloppy to begin with. It's not like we just went for the jugular right from the off, and scored a couple early goals and killed the game. We, fluffed a couple of chances, got into gear though eventually.
Yeah.
But then it's away from home.
Exactly.
The crowd was supposed to be quite intimidating.
Yeah, which they
were dreadful when we go, over the Iron Curtain and any further than that, usually. So it's petty criticism, I appreciate, but...
Yeah, they were passive, it was low tempo, we weren't particularly crisp to begin with, it didn't really matter. I was waiting for some point where they would burst into life and think, we really need to start pressing, increasing their tempo, if nothing else, because it would bring the crowd into it, but they never did it. And at half-time, I literally, just before the goal went in, me and Gareth were thinking, God, this has been really comfortable. It's a shame we're not a goal up. And then as we're thinking that, we've squandered several decent chances and one open goal. You're thinking, well, the time has passed. And then we did seem to get blessed with that little bit of luck where it literally just sort of fell our way. And the moment that went in, you thought, yeah, this game's in the bag now.
And the two yellow cards and the free kick.
It was a calamitous sort of three, 4 minutes either side of half time. It was quite strange. Having said, when we played Cyprus and when we went down to 10 men, it changed the game. It brought Cyprus back in. I don't think their sending off really made much of a difference at all. We were in control prior to their sending off and we remained in control after. The only thing I can think is perhaps that one of the reasons they hadn't lunged in and dived in and tried to press us is because they fear Bale's pace and thought, well, if we try too hard, we're going to get done for tackling him cynically. And that's exactly what happened. So the one time they did commit, you know, Bale sort of read the situation, pushed the ball past him, knowing that he's got the pace to get there first, leaving the play with no option, basically, but to check in.
Well,
so maybe that's why they sat off to begin with, because they...
I thought he gambled a little bit and tried to play the ref and think, he's not going to book me twice this quickly.
Yeah.
So he pretty much just barges him off the ball. And correctly, the referee went, no, I'm not buying that. They're two fouls, whatever.
I think you're giving him too much credit there.
Yeah, I don't think he could have thought that.
He didn't have time
quickly
to think that.
Bale just came at him. And we've seen this so many times in the goal. Was it against Iceland where he was almost in the first row with the stands? Where the guy tries to basically rugby tackle him off the pitch and he runs right the way round him.
Yeah.
And he did something similar against Norway. His burst of pace is phenomenal. And his legs are so long, he can kick the ball further away than most players would and remain in control.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows he's going to get there first. And he forced TB to buy that. And there was nothing he could do. He just had to think, oh, I'm going to have to just step in.
Maybe I'm being kind.
And then maybe hope afterwards, well, the ref's not going to book me twice in 2 minutes. Oh, yes, he is. Yeah. Well, there we are.
I liked our kind of the way we're learning how to play in certain situations as well. Because we don't get into that 2-0, 40 minutes still to go away from home in a comfortable game like that. And around about the hour mark, we had 5 minutes, we were a bit sloppy. We kind of losing possession a bit more. Didn't really know how to play in that position. And then 5 minutes later, then they calmed down, nice to passing, just keeping the ball. And we realised, oh, this is what you do when you're winning 2-0 away from home.
We've got the players to do it now.
And we have got the exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we look comfortable on the ball. We look comfortable in possession, which for years we didn't. We didn't look comfortable in possession and on the ball. And we would always have to concede territory in possession. And then we would be the team that had the frantic 20 minutes of punting it long. You know, kick and rush and just try. Well, we'll try and win it this way because we don't have the ability to just calmly out-football the opponent. Well, here, against Israel, we do, and we did. It's one of the most clinical performances I've ever seen from Wales. Probably the best performance I've ever seen is away from home. We don't win 3-0 away from home very often against anyone.
Well, I can think of a couple of sort of, I suppose, backs to the wall offensive efforts where drilled, it's organised, it's disciplined. But that's a different sort of performance.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's against Germany, Russia, the playoff game.
We've done it out in Ukraine, we've done that out in Poland.
Yeah. In terms of a team that is more or less on a par with us, we've lost to those teams. And sometimes we've lost to far inferior teams and heavily. So to actually go there and, as you say, clinically, and that was the word that came to mind, as we were watching it, to me. Yeah, I think you're probably right, actually.
Even in bad times, we pick up the odd good draw somewhere, don't we? Often away from home. This is a different type of good away performance.
And in a competitive game as well. We picked up the odd decent away win, won in Denmark under Toshak.
We won in Bulgaria.
And so a couple of decent results at home as well under Speeding Switzerland. That was a terrific performance as well. But competitively, away from home, I can't think of one for you. I mean, you're probably back in the days of Mike England, probably.
Absolutely. Competitively, in that sense, that there's so much riding on it. It was a massive game. It wasn't going away from home, and it looked like there was no chance of us qualifying.
Yeah, in the '94 World Cup campaign under Yorath, we didn't get any big wins away from home in that campaign, did we? The big victories were all at home. I think we got a couple of draws away from home, but to go, when that game kicked off, Israel were top of the group with a 100% record. And
having a bit of a swagger as well.
Absolutely. And having won their first three games quite handsomely, including against Bosnia. A team couldn't go into it. They couldn't have been more ideally set up. 100% record, game at home, won your previous two games 3-0 and 4-1.
The point I was going to make, Rafael, which I didn't because I thought it would be unfair to kind of throw history of Welsh football at him, which he's probably not all that aware of. I wonder whether their campaign is very similar to how ours went under Hughes, where we won those first four games and then basically
fell
off a cliff. Yeah. And I just wonder whether they're at that similar sort of...
They seemed worse than we did in Hughes' campaign, didn't
they? They upped the game against Belgium.
Well, yeah, I kind of feel with that. Belgium are never going to beat anyone 4-0. Belgium if they're leading, they'll just cruise out the game. So I'm not sure how impressive Israel were.
They put Cyprus away, didn't they?
They thumped Belgium
the other way.
Well, I mean, Cyprus, I'm talking about kind of better
but,
teams.
I mean, I take your point. Still, I come back to what surprised me about that game is that Israel didn't look any better than the Cyprus team we played in Cardiff. I'm surprised just how poor they were. And they've got a hard run in now. It wouldn't, you know, like you say, it could well be that they collapse. The only question mark over that, I think, is that I don't know if anyone else watched the Belgium against Israel game. They were better, you know, they weren't good, but in the second half they gave Belgium a game, all right, mostly against 10 men.
Yeah.
But they looked better organised, they were a threat, they had some, you know, some good shots, so they worked a keeper a few times. And that made me think probably they're not going to challenge to qualify. But that might have kind of boosted them up a bit. I don't necessarily think now it's the case they go to Bosnia and definitely just get wiped out. They might give someone else still a game.
Well, their campaign is hanging on this game against Bosnia, isn't it? Because, you know, three wins, brilliant. If you then follow up with three defeats, it's looking very tough to qualify for them. So they've got everything riding on this game against Bosnia. It is a potential knockout blow for either of those teams. If it ends in a draw, I don't think it would suit either of them that much, probably Israel more than Bosnia. But whoever loses that game, their campaign is more or less done, isn't it?
I think it would be for Bosnia, yeah, to lose a home.
But given Israel's fixtures now, given that Israel have got to come here and go to Belgium, their campaign
Bosnia,
is looking
better. Oh no, they recognise that now. And I think, you know, when Rich and I spoke to him, he said, I expected him to say happy with 4 points. He alluded to there being a degree of opinion to that effect as well. Rafael himself said he'd be happy with 3. We all know where he expected
three
those
expected
3 were more likely to come from. We spoke about this last time. If they'd have got 2 points out of those games, they'd have got 1 point, probably disappointed with that. To have got none, that didn't really, if you let's be honest, that didn't even come into our conversation with him.
No.
You know,
well, and when you've got 100% record and 2-1 games back to back, and you're, what were they, 27, 28 in the world rankings, you'd be expecting to get points from those games. I think it's brought them down to earth, which actually might do us a favour for the Bosnia game, because they can't be passive and as low tempo, low key as they were against us. Because if they do, they're out. Their tournament's over, and Bosnia
they
are back
win.
In it.
They have to win. That's what Rafael said. You know, that we know they have to go to Bosnia to win. Whether they go looking to win or whether they just try to see if they can hang on in and then just chuck the kitchen sink them with 20 to go or something, that would be interesting. But I thought it was really telling, and again I made the point with Rafael. I'm not sure if it was in one of the immediate sort of interviews after, whether it was the actual press conference. Coleman, he said Israel played exactly as he was expecting them to, which is pretty damning of the Israelis.
What's that? Coleman said Israel played exactly how Oshad Roberts expected them to play. Is that what he said?
Fair enough. Which I suppose reflects well on Roberts, because apparently that is his brief, certainly a significant part of his brief. And it reflects badly then on them for thinking that perhaps they could, you know, just sort of not just turn up, but not need to do anything radically different or novel. Players they've carried on playing, which when you sit top of the group, the 3 wins, 2. He's understandable, but Rafa, I sort of said, look, I posed the question, well, was that a degree of arrogance, was it naivety? Oh no, it was arrogance. Phew. So he's probably going to need to do something though when they go to Bosnia.
That brings great confidence, doesn't it? That yet again a different kind of game, but yet again the sort of tactical judgment on our side, brilliant.
We do look more streetwise than normal. But once again, it makes it look easier when you've got the personnel to do it. You know, in the end, we know that we can pass the ball. It wasn't crisp to begin with, but then nor were they. Both teams played like they hadn't played for a few months. But once you've got the personnel to do that, I suppose it makes it easier,
well,
doesn't it?
Talking of personnel then, I mean, obviously Bale was what you want him to be, what you hope he's going to be, what the opponents hope he's not going to be, and wasn't what they hope going to be. I'm trying to say now, but any other credit due to anywhere
Joe
else.
Joe Allen, I think. Mm. I mean, he was just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, one, just how you said about, in terms of we're looking kind of, I guess, tougher as a team. I mean, that's one thing Coleman said, that the group was too nice. And it does seem he's kind of instilled, and this is something I was hoping for as well. We're kind of, I'll come back to Joe Allen in a second, but Gareth Bale was fully aware that guy was on the yellow card. I mean, and I want to see us doing that, because that's how teams qualify, that's how you win games, is by targeting players on yellow cards. But just going back to Joe Allen, he's still sort of, a lot of fans, I mean, not Wales fans, I would say, but kind of fans of Liverpool, I guess. So this is like this small, lightweight kind of midfielder, but he really is kind of getting towards that kind of elite level, I believe, of like possession football in the midfield, which we really, really need. And he kind of just kind of controlled it and just recycled the ball. And he was integral. I think he is like a really integral player to every single thing we do, because if we haven't got someone like him to get the ball from the back, move it forward, keep it going. I mean, we kind of wore them out in a sense. They knew there was nothing they could do, because the second they lost the ball, it was going to be a while before they got it back, and that's mentally draining for them. Mm. So yeah, Joe Allen, he's a huge influence for us. In that game, he was great.
I named him man of the match. I think it was a poll. Was there a poll? I think on the message board. I sort of named him man of the match for the simple reason. Well, partly just to be a bit contrary, because obviously it was Bale. Bale doesn't get the opportunity to play like that if he's not getting the ball quickly where he wants it, or where he's going to want it, and he's you know, he's making a run somewhere. And I think Allen was like a metronome. He would pick the ball up, and there was a great post from is it Texan, who's clearly involved in football trust and you know, academy type stuff, very, very knowledgeable, very, very insightful as well, and articulate about the tactical side of the game. And he was making a point of that sort of Swansea school, it's two touches. One to control it, second one to deliver it. And I was watching the 21s do this, and they had a core of Swansea players in that, and that is pretty much all they did. And if they took a third, it was because somebody was on them and they needed that third touch to get away. It was really, really interesting to watch. And Allen probably didn't have that many touches of the ball. I don't think he wasted a pass all evening. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. But your point about us being tougher and a bit more resilient, he is really tough and resilient himself. Because I think a lot of players, a lot of opponents, even now, even though he's a 50 million quid player, even though he's Liverpool, he's Champions League, they still go, look at him, he's tiny. And they try to impose themselves physically on him. And very rarely does it happen. Certainly not for us. And I think where you perhaps have that possibly happening, that's when Joe Ledley comes in. And I thought Ledley played really well as well. But Allen, I thought, for me, other than Bale, I thought was really, really good.
Same here, Joe Allen. I don't think he's got the credit that he deserves for that performance, or indeed many of his performances for Wales and for Liverpool. If you looked at in the papers and a lot of the commentary afterwards, it was all about, I mean, a lot of the stuff that's been posted online, you know, Gareth Bale versus Israel. Clearly he grabs the headlines, but clearly these people didn't watch the game, because there was far more to it than that. Although in the end, Bale was running through them for fun at the end, in the last 20 minutes. He had them all, you know, sized up, and he knew he could beat them man for man each time. But I think Allen, he was an outstanding player, outstanding performance. And the combination with Ledley, that if there is a bit where he's under pressure, because he isn't very big and they think they can impose him, not that I think Israel didn't really play aggressive enough to do that, but Ledley's there with a bit of dog, basically, to get stuck in. If you feel that we might get bullied in midfield, and Ledley's grown into this role as well.
That said about Ledley, I just called it up now on the BBC website. I don't recall him going off as early as he did.
It was about 48, 49.
Well done, 48 minutes. And Vaughan came on, and I thought Vaughan again just...
He did really well.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for David Vaughan, always have done. And just keeps things ticking over. And I thought he did really well.
I mean, David Vaughan really is, it's unfortunate, he's 10 years too old.
Yeah.
Really, he needs to be coming through now. Yeah. This is a different kind of footballing environment for him. Like, I mean, he's a Premier, he'd be like an EPL player or La Liga player, certainly, if he was 10 years younger.
But when he came through at Crewe, maybe he's a Crewe fan, he was a left winger. And he played a lot of games for Crewe as well. I mean, you know, from a very early age.
Strange to think, he doesn't look
not
like he was ever
possibly,
a winger.
No, does
games.
He?
No, he was a left winger. And you do wonder whether, if he'd come through in a bit more of the modern age, and you make him sound ancient, but you know, more now, as you say, whether someone would go, actually, no, you're better employed in the middle.
A perfect kind of stage for him to come into as well. You know, he had the easier half to play, I suppose, but when you're kind of looking to take control of the game, just every time it kind of comes into him from the back and it moves forward, the ball moves forward every time he plays it. Yeah. It was a kind of period around about sort of 65, 70 minutes. You know, during that time when Bale was getting the ball more and more and folks were in the team, and it was just moving forward every single time, either from Allen or from him. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, defensively, you didn't really have that much to do, I don't suppose.
But
Collins and Williams, it's rare we see them together. We've made that point before. Barely noticed Williams, which I think, you know, usually you notice him a lot, you know, because he's getting stuck in. And I think it just, you know,
they didn't have much to do, did they?
No. Are we going to say much about Collins' miss?
I think we should talk up Collins a bit. It was a dreadful miss, admittedly, but we haven't kind of no one's worried about whether or not. Well, we are worried a little bit, and we want James Chester to be there for Belgium, but I'm not worried in the same way I was worried going into the Israel game. No. Can we kind of cover that loss? Is Collins going to step? He stepped in fine. He dealt with that cross early on.
Yeah,
really got a great positioning as ever. He was always there when the ball was coming over. All right, when he gets in the other box, he's. He's made a bit of hash of it. And he did have, actually, early in the game, he kind of sort of dives into a tackle. And he wins the ball really well. It's quite high up the pitch in midfield. And it's one of those which sort of, if you time it wrongly by a sort of nanosecond, the way he kind of sort of jumped forward into it, and if the player goes down holding his leg, it looks like a really bad tackle. And I thought, oh God, that could have been the one they always talk about on the message board when they give him a hard time for his gaffe. But just kind of won the ball cleanly, it started another attack. Back he goes. 5 minutes later, he's dealing with that cross. And he was just always in the right place. And I think for him to kind of step up amidst those doubts, he was really good.
I thought he had a hard time on the message boards. Yeah. There seemed to be a lot of flack going his way.
In terms of what for? In general?
For his performance. And I thought, well, okay, yeah, he
missed Israel.
Yeah, I thought he missed a sitter. But, okay, fine. I mean, you know, you don't hold that against him overly in terms of his defensive.
I don't think you can. You wouldn't. No rational person would lay any kind of negative on that miss. I mean, this is a centre back, and it's not a cultured one either. I thought he was really competent. Yeah. I thought he was
not there to score, really.
he was really decent. Well. I would still say I'm kind of. I wouldn't feel at ease with him playing against Belgium. I mean, maybe that's partly my thinking is influenced by what happened last time. And I do think maybe even playing away. For some reason, I see him getting really pumped up for the Belgium game if he's playing, and that really worries me. A kind of an Israel away game where it's kind of a very chilled out team seems a lot more preferable for him. But didn't James Chester play at right back?
He's played a couple of Hull, right sort of right wing back. He's played
recently,
for Hull recently,
which kind of raises the issue. I mean, I'm a huge Chris Gunter fan, not for his playing ability as such, although he's played pretty well. But yeah, it gives us a slightly different option where you could potentially have Chester, Williams, Collins, and then Davis or Taylor at left back. But yeah, for me, definitely, I would still say he performed well, but Chester and Williams is still the partnership.
Be interesting to see where kind of Chester's role develops at Hull now. I mean, it's, you know, I was surprised to see he before his injury, he played a game sort of right wing back. They got four or five centre halves, haven't they? And I don't know how well he did. I don't know how well he did when he came back into the team this time. But yeah, it was a kind of selection headache because Ben Davis looks really good as the sort of left of the three centre-halves as well.
Yeah, he did well.
If all four of them are fit and we decide to play sort of wing-backs against Belgium, it's, you know, it's hard to know what
this is a great position
to be
in because we do have like credible options
but
as
it's
well.
But it's also experimenting from a position of strength. You know, the other advantage, you know, in a similar vein, is that you blood youngsters from a position of strength. So you blood youngsters into a confident side, but you're experimenting, knowing that we've got a couple of patterns, a couple of formations, a couple of tactical approaches, different options in terms of personnel. So I don't know, for argument's sake, the Northern Ireland game, fine, give Chester a run out then at right back or wing back or whatever. But you do it and you have a look at it, and you know it could be we have no bearing or with no sort of connection relevance to the Belgium game. It's just we've got this friendly. We need to keep a few players ticking over.
Yeah,
Chester's going to be at very least you know sort of. I know these days everyone's on the bench, but you know, in the old sort of you know, starting 11, two or three subs, he'd be in that match day squad.
Yeah.
So give him a little run out and just try something a bit different. It's rare that we, as you say, it's rare that we get the chance to do that, because usually you get a raft of withdrawals. So you're playing people that, you know, really offering you very little long term. You hope that they might, but you know, chances are they're not. So yeah, no, I think it would be interesting to see him you know, get a little run out in that.
I think that would be an interesting game, because I can't imagine, I mean, inevitably there's going to be injury pull-ups, but I can't imagine anyone will be dropping out of any squad now leading up to...
Is it definitely happening, the Northern Ireland game?
Mm.
It's confirmed, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're playing Belgium on the Friday, the Thursday week before we're playing them, I think. Apparently the reason is because Manchester Preachers are playing the Castle on the Friday, so there's a police requirement there. And obviously, as you all know, One Direction are playing the Saturday in Cardiff. So that's why it's on a rather odd day. And I think it's going the other side of that weekend, you're probably running the risk of niggly injuries and things not clearing up. So, and the fixture's got a bit of a kick in, but I don't mind it.
It's not a highly appealing game by any stretch.
Northern Ireland are in as strong a position as we are. Are they top of their group or are they second? They're very similar situation to us.
Second,
to
Romania.
I mean, will it become like an A game? Is anyone who's going to start against Belgium likely to have a proper game in that game? It's an incredible risk to take, isn't it? When we haven't seemed to need friendlies a huge amount recently in this campaign.
You wonder whether you're giving a big risk to put someone in a game.
Yeah,
But then Hennessy needs games because he's
Hennessy,
not playing.
Hennessy needs to play.
Yeah, so
that could be a half each.
Maybe that's Northern Ireland's philosophy as well, because they're often in the same position. Players who don't play enough for their club.
I'm not sure if there's anyone we can come to a little nice cosy arrangement and agreement with. It'll be them.
Hasn't there been some kind of discussion about what it means for the World Cup qualifying draw?
Well, it does. And do you know what I was about to say? Hold that thought for the simple reason. We're talking about players, and just to kind of, you know, keep the thread and limit the editing I have to do. Vokes made his return. I thought he did really, really well. He looked rusty,
yeah,
but he was really busy. I thought Robson Kanu was a bit ineffective, but he kept them on their toes. But Vokes was pretty responsible for setting up another two or three chances when he came on. I'm looking at it in the 69th minute, and it was good to see him back.
He was really good. He just needs to play now for Burnley.
He is playing, isn't he, for Burnley?
Yeah, but he needs a run of games. Oh, he's kind of 10.
Yeah.
It was a bad injury. It's taken him a lot. I mean, he came back, I think, off the bench on Boxing Day, possibly. He's been...
And then they kind of held him back.
He's had a very gradual return, which you'd understand, and hopefully we'll see more and more of him as the season goes on. I mean, it looked like, for all he was carrying a bit of weight and he wasn't sharp, he kind of dragged a shot, didn't he, at one point. He looked like a striker. I mean, he looked like we had a striker at the focal point of our attack. When Bale kind of has a go and fluffs it at the near post when he's on a hat trick, Vokes is right there on the edge of the 6-yard box waiting for the pass. You know, he'd kind of had a shot blocked, but he kind of recovered the pass. Another phase of play comes. Ramsey and Allen have a little bit of a pass on the board into him. There's another chance again.
Yeah.
He looked great to have someone who was a proper striker there.
I sense he was busting the gut to get on as well. Mm. He must have been like a bottle of pop in training all week, you know. And that's good, because there's not a huge number of other options.
Well, in terms of his style of player, I mean, that really is the only option, isn't it? I mean, realistically, Coleman isn't going to pick Craig Davis, is he? Mm. He's just not going to.
He just doesn't seem to want to pick him.
He's just not going to select him, so you can forget about him. But I think the best thing about Vokes is it gives us, I'm not 100% certain whether he would be in my starting 11, everyone was fit, but I would say he would always be in the matchday squad and he'd always be involved at some point, and he gives you that ability to vary the approach, either during a game or for a set tactic if you're coming up against a certain opposition. So yeah, it's huge to have him back, really, really big.
Yeah.
I mean, he perhaps was more suited, certainly the fitness he's in now, to go into that game at that time. Robson Kanu, like you say, was a bit ineffectual, but perhaps his time is more against the bigger teams when we've got to just kind of set up and have our back to the wall a little bit, he'll be kind of strong on the ball. He'll kind of he'll come into him. He'll play a little pass off. Whether he's really going to, you know, really spectacularly get at a defender, or whether he's going to have that bit of magic or finesse to open a defence is less likely. Do we think that has this game made it the case that Bale's role now is that sort of that free role with one other player? Are his days on the right gone?
I think it is away from home, because I think the others are going to need to do a job. They're going to need to be, you know, organised, disciplined, and you know, that stands to be the case for any side. But I think it gives him a little bit more freedom away from home. Teams are going to be coming on at us more often than not, and he has that opportunity to pick the ball up just behind the midfield. And if you can give him that space, the Cyprus game was proof of this. When we played Austria a couple of years back in a friendly, he was doing this a lot. If he's picking the ball up there, and he can do it whether he's coming in from the right or he's coming in through the middle or wherever. If he's doing it having had to drop back from up front, then I think that's when we begin to lose a bit of his effectiveness. Only a bit. He's still a terrific player. I think away from home, certainly. How did Ramsey go? Because he was unfairly criticised in Belgium. I thought he took on for the team. But having said that, we haven't seen him as an offensive threat, for a while.
Well, that was absolutely it, wasn't it? It was a kind of step of progress from the Belgian game, measured alongside his return from injury, and he did all right against Belgium, but we weren't really offering a huge attacking threat. In this game, we talked about Alan and Ledley earlier, and there all just allowed him to kind of go and play and link up with Bale, and that was the two of them looked like they might be able to go on and play together is really kind of frightening for teams we might play in the future, I hope.
And it's really interesting, this is kind of what's such like a huge advantage of having Ledley and Alan behind him, is he can make that really late run, which isn't going to be a problem for us if it breaks down and the team counter-attacks. But also, I mean, he got a goal and an assist, and this is a midfielder away from home against a team that's in good form. Irrespective of how poor they were, he still got the goal and he still got the assist, which I think you can't underestimate the value of having a midfielder at international level who will do that in a match. I mean, yeah, and it's really exciting to see him. I mean, hopefully now he's going to stay fit for like a really, really long time, which I think, again, I mean, clearly he's not at the levels he was maybe a year ago in terms of, like, he's not scoring so many spectacular goals and that kind of thing. But if he scores one 25-yard volley in a campaign for us, that will be a really great return.
He might never quite get back what he had for that 6 months, you know, a while back. Mm. But to look at him, he had a good game for Arsenal recently.
Yeah.
And to look at him the other day, you think, well, he's still a great, he's a top midfielder. If that's as good as he ever gets again now, fine, you know.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
stay fit.
Yeah, I think so.
He's operating at a really high level. Yeah. And I personally do think the goals will come again. And I think we're extremely kind of, we're doing really well to have them all working together.
But that second half, all right, albeit against a poor team with 10 men, he was constantly constantly into the box. Him and then when Vokes came on as well, three of them sort of in and around the box constantly. It's really good.
I've never seen a Wales game where you're literally thinking, well, this could be 4, 5 or 6.
I'll credit the Israel keeper for some of that as well. He got a bit of a... Rafael wasn't very impressed with the Ramsey goal, which is the kind of one thing you talk about. Actually, he was very quick out to some of the chances, to snuff out some of the chances. He did it at least once to Vokes. He did it to Bale. He did it to Ramsey. Quick out on the ball when the ball was played through to them. I think he was their best player.
Yeah. We put 5 past Slovakia away. Do you remember we beat 5-2? And we were very, very good that day.
Yes.
The game itself was a dead rubber.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing riding on that. Yeah.
Bellamy scored twice in that.
Bellamy did. I think even Simon Davis scored.
Because we lost 5-1 at home, didn't we? And Gareth Bale scored.
Yeah.
That's the last time we won by 3 goals away. And what was that? 2007?
Yeah. But in terms of... So if that game was a dead rubber, this is our most important away win.
And I think this is one.
Since beating Finland 2-0 under Mark Hughes.
Pretty much
for the opening game of the 2004 European Championships.
Yeah, pretty much. It's been too long.
Yeah, you know, we don't win away very often in competitive games, and to win in that manner was very satisfying. You know.
So yeah, I'm still on cloud 9.
Do you know when we last had 5 consecutive games without defeat in one qualifying campaign?
Is it you asking me or are you going to tell me?
I can tell you.
Is it going to be the European Championships in the 70s? Because we didn't lose a game, did we, in 76 European Championships, wasn't it?
Yeah, so 1976 was the last...
We topped the group, didn't we? I don't think we're in a run.
I think it's great that this team is setting records. They're not setting records, are they? But they're putting those little sort of runs together. It's something for the press to kind of chuck into a little press conference, isn't it? Or when they have those little one-to-ones with the players, some of the players, different players get selected from camp to camp. It's great to be able to chuck that in, because I'm not so sure that players, you know, in their early 20s are going to think of 1976. I mean, it's just, it's grainy TV, and it's against, you know, under the Iron Curtain and things like that.
Countries that don't even exist anymore.
Well, yes.
Yugoslavia.
What's actually quite cool about that is I'm kind of in some ways glad that this group of players wouldn't know or necessarily care about that kind of thing, because it seems like they haven't got any kind of preconceptions or baggage. They're kind of, they're not expecting, although a lot of them have had some really bad defeats with us. But the idea, I think, amongst them is we're like a really good team. So that was the whole, what is kind of my first comment this evening. It seemed like a really efficient, normal performance by a team that knows what it's doing.
They're not surprised by that.
They're not looking
at each other thinking, hang on, what the hell's happening here? It was, this is what we know we can do. I agree.
And it's good for any new players that come into the team. It's kind of, and it keeps that going. So a new player coming in feels comfortable.
Blooded from a position of strength. You can experiment from a position of strength, exactly. You know, it's what, you know, it's what all the successful sides do. They just then begin to evolve, rather than sort of say, you know, I mean, Welsh rugby's done this for years. Let's chuck this great white hope in, and you know, and then berate them, and English cricket.
But when you get the results, exactly, you don't need to make those panic measures, you know. So
precisely.
Long may it continue.
Precisely. Gareth, you mentioned the cut you short. The Northern Ireland friendly we've got the week before Belgium. I'm kind of always worried to discuss and raise things to do with FIFA rankings and points and how the hell it all works.
Lists. What could be more fun and interesting than sporting lists?
Yeah.
I can't think of anything better.
There's a thread on the message board, and I won't profess to understand the ins and outs of it, and certainly the maths involved. But apparently, according to some, if we play Northern Ireland, irrespective of the result, we can not make it into pot one for the next World Cup qualification pools, which apparently we have an outside chance of making if we were to beat Belgium. So the theory is that we shouldn't play Northern Ireland, we shouldn't play anybody, because it will put pot one out of reach. But my issue with that is, surely pot one, pot two will sort of look after themselves. Why don't we just concentrate on trying to do whatever we can to beat Belgium? And if that fixture, irrespective of the opposition, you know, Richie doesn't really do much for you as opponents, but irrespective of that point, if a game helps us, keep us in the groove, keeps players ticking over, for what I think for championship players might be as much as a month of inaction, other than those who are involved in playoffs.
I agree with you to a point, actually. If the Northern Ireland friendly was a worthwhile fixture, and we were kind of pretty sure it was, then let's be honest, we're getting ahead of ourselves then to think about World Cup rankings, or certainly we're getting ahead of ourselves to think about beating Belgium in pot one. But if there's a feeling anyway that we don't need the Northern Ireland game, in fact perhaps if we were to risk even one or two of our first team get injured, it's counterproductive, then that's just an added reason not to. Plus, I'd really love to be in pot one. Wouldn't that be amazing? But no, I kind of agree. I wouldn't get too hung up on it. But yeah, I just struck me as a very interesting position we were in with that ranking coming up so soon afterwards.
Given for when the pools, the groups now that we're in, were selected, we were in pool
four.
But for the ones before that,
we were way down.
We were six. So we've gone from below the Faroe Islands to on the cusp of, you know, getting ahead of the likes of Italy, I think, and Portugal, and Sweden. Russia, I think, definitely.
We're ahead of them.
And for that change to happen so quickly, to my mind, kind of, and you know, it's obviously statistics and things that, you know, underpin all of this and working them all out, but that kind of then undermines their credibility for me.
But there's a lot of the bigger countries are struggling in their groups, so that we're not the only ones in the rankings moving up and down. Everyone else is doing the same. Portugal lost to the Cape Verde Islands the other week at home. Italy have had a sluggish campaign. Spain are second in their group behind Slovakia.
Holland
are really struggling in their group. Germany are second. Greece are bottom.
A dreadful time.
They lost to the Faroe Islands.
Republic of Ireland.
Teams England are cruising their group. They're probably the only seeded team that I can think of who's just going through the motions.
Belgium at the top of their group. They're not going through the motions, but they're the top of
yeah,
their group.
Yeah, I think England will probably win all 10 games of their qualifying group.
It is the dullest group ever.
Mm. Yes,
selected.
Yeah. But
incidentally,
indeed it is. But because there have been no shocks, England have dealt with exactly what's come their way. They're cruising through in second or third gear, but everyone else isn't. And I remember thinking when they expanded the championship. Most people would have thought, well, the big teams now, it's almost impossible for them to not qualify. But yet something odd has happened, that whereas these teams normally dominate their groups in a World Cup qualifying group where they have to finish top to guarantee it, maybe they think, oh, because it's almost impossible not to qualify, maybe psychologically the bigger teams aren't up for it. While at the very same time, the smaller countries are, because they think we've got a genuine chance of qualification. You know, Wales have a genuine chance of qualification here for the first time in a long time. The same with Northern Ireland, Slovakia, Iceland.
Yeah. Somebody made a point on the message board, though, that one of the veiled criticisms, less maybe not even veiled, of the format at the moment of the European Championships, it's expanded, so more teams qualify, is that, well, that's why the likes of Wales and Northern Ireland and others are in with a shout. So someone made a point on the message board, which hadn't occurred to me, but I think is a really valid one, is that if we won the group, yeah, so if we actually beat Belgium, which I think, you know, would put us in a really good position to actually win the group, it doesn't matter how many teams are in this. It could only be 12 teams. It could be like back in like the 80s, just a traditional 18, 12 team, whatever competition. You actually qualify. Nobody could take away or detract from that achievement, winning the group and qualifying. Second, third via playoff. Everyone, well, it's you're only there because. And that hadn't occurred to me. And I think, again, the relevance to this friendly fixture or not is that if, I don't know, but if that fixture is deemed to give us a better chance of beating Belgium, then I'm all for it. And
I thought we were in a position where we weren't that fussed on friendlies. And I thought he liked to have the kind of squad together.
He's on record of saying that, yeah.
So, I mean, if it happened, I mean...
Maybe it's simply because it's the middle of summer and, you know, because it's out of season, you don't want to take that risk. You don't want to take that risk of losing a game, not because you were outplayed, not because you were outthought or outbattled, but simply you were undercooked.
I think there are times you can play the rankings.
To Belgium as well, because everyone's out of season, but...
There are times you can play the rankings. I think Switzerland did it at a point when they would qualified for a World Cup, but the draw had yet to be made, and there was a friendly game in between that I think it was Italy played, and they won, but they played someone ridiculous and small, and ended up not as one of the top seeds for the World Cup proper, and Switzerland did, because they realised if we don't play a game, even if Italy beat whoever it was, we'll get through. Now that's in a small space of time. Problem now is, whatever draw is made in July 2015, we're not going to play a game in that group for over another year.
Mm.
In that time, the relative performance of teams will change. The teams that do badly in the World Cup, they'll regroup and do something different and bring in some different players to the next tournament. It doesn't really matter if pot one or pot two. What if we get in pot one and then we get France or Italy? You know, they're not going to still be rubbish, are they, in a year's time?
Just because of the pot they're in. Yeah. No, I think the difference between
a one pot either side is not that massive. It's great for us to get from pot four up to pot two.
Mm.
Great.
Particularly if you're just sneaking in.
Mm.
Yeah, so if you're that, I don't know how many groups there are, say it's six groups then, if you're that sixth team in pot one, or you're the seventh and therefore the first team in pot two, I don't think it does make that much difference. Because all you're going to be doing is displacing an Italy from pot one. From the top tier to the second tier.
There's so many possible outcomes for the draw anyway. I mean, if you get the best or the worst team in each pot, how much many groups of the World Cup? I'm not sure.
I think
isn't it? For than
it's than more now. Groups.
They usually get to a H, don't they? G or H, so seven or eight.
But what I was getting at is that the What was I getting at?
But I would say, if you're in group one, in pot one, like psychologically that's nice, it's a kind of nice prestige thing for us, but in terms of, and again that's probably really positive for like the mentality of the squad and for the fans as well, but in practical terms on the pitch, it doesn't really make any difference, I don't think, one or two. Good to be in one or two, I would say, that's a really good thing, but between one and two, I can't see all that much.
It hasn't helped Bosnia, has it?
Yeah. In fact,
and they were the seeds for this group.
Yeah,
Greece are bottom of their group with two. They lost to the Faroe Islands. They were seeded. It hasn't helped them. In the end, it's what goes on the pitch that matters, and ultimately that's where it's going to count.
In fact, if Bosnia,
it would be nice for vanity purposes, wasn't it, to see Wales. In pot one,
I agree. I think
that'd be like
that prestige,
really. Yeah. But then there'd be all the other teams in Europe would be thinking if this was to happen, they're thinking, yeah, Germany or Wales, yeah, we'll have Wales. So everyone else would be dying to get us because they think, well, they're clearly one of the weaker of the top six.
Things are, like you say, things are so fluid. Like if Bosnia don't beat Israel, and they might not, they could well drop out. They could drop into pot three. And then as things stand, we could draw exactly the same group as we're in now, having everyone moved around all sorts of pots, as going from pot four to pot two and whatever else. It's so fluid, you can't tell.
There are mathematicians perhaps listening to this, or will listen to this, who probably sort of rubbishing all of this and apparently sort of, this is what can happen.
Statistically,
you
could
prove these number of chances.
Well,
I don't profess to understand them.
Yeah. If nothing else, if you've been in pot one, you can't be in a group with Germany. And that's, you know, always going to be a good thing. But most of the time, you're not in a group with Germany. You know, they always qualify. So if they're there, they are going to qualify. And if there's only one team going through from the group, it ain't you, it's them. And it's always been that way. So that is the only solid benefit I could think of, that it keeps you out of Germany's group.
Also, if you're in pot one, you could be in a group with Austria, Albania, Estonia, Faroe Islands, and Andorra.
This is England's
group. England's group
now,
isn't it?
I'll have a look at that. That's England's group now, I'm sure it is.
And the FA going, how will we sell these seats with that sort of group? So, okay, to conclude, we're not that bothered. We still don't understand them.
But we're also 22nd in the world, by the way. If we're going to talk about the rankings.
Absolutely, yeah.
Let's
pick
that up for a minute.
Cape Verde Islands are number 30, mine. So,
Cape Verde Islands.
Yes.
And when they beat Portugal, would that be like Anglesey beating Wales? Or, I mean, I'll defer to the Anglesey resident. I mean, or to, you know, flat home and steep home or something.
Well, Cape Verde Islands used to be a Portuguese colony, so it would be like Anglesey declaring independence and then 20 years later coming back to haunt you with a 2-0 win at the Cardiff City Stadium.
Yeah, Wayne Hennessy in goal.
You've just mentioned the notion of Anglesey declaring independence, and Rich has just gone all sort of misty-eyed if only.
I'm from Ynysmore.
I don't even really know
what Anglesey
is. Is that like Gibraltar beating England 2-0 at Wembley? I mean, really? No, they can't. No, they must... They were in the African Cup of Nations, weren't they?
They were, yeah. No, they've been great for
they
a while.
They must be a fairly decent team. Yeah. But in the, you know, you look at it and you think, okay, Germany number one, yeah, sounds about right. Belgium number three, not quite sure. England way down about like 14 for some reason. That's probably because their group is so weak. Even when they win, they drop down the rankings.
No, I think it's because it's so tedious. People just aren't taking any notice of the results. They can't bother to look at it. They're trying and they're yawning and falling asleep.
Isn't there a rule which is just like England are always somewhere between 8th and 11th? Switzerland are always 12th, aren't they?
The United States are always about like 17 or 18, aren't they? So,
Lofty, rarefied.
Holland are always about number 6.
I'd be interested to know what the record sort of climb in a given time period. Given we were sort of 4 years ago, we were 116.
Well, I think we did account for it, didn't we? Under speed.
Yeah.
I think it was that year we beat Switzerland and Bulgaria in consecutive games. Norway. Well, it was at the end of his reign. I think going into that Norway game, I think we had... I'm pretty sure that we were one of the highest or fastest climbers...
Over a year,
in an annual sort of period, But I mean, I don't know what it is over a 3 or 4 year period, but I think we dropped to 117th. Like, I remember us dropping to over 100. I don't remember it being quite that low, but
would it have been something like Montenegro, maybe? Because they would have started.
Yeah, it was around. It was at the end of Toshak's reign.
Oh no! So it wouldn't. The highest.
Oh, sorry. Yes, no, they did. Oh,
so
yes.
Like the newly sort of newly independent nations who were good straight away, sort of thing.
Yeah, because they became good really straight away, wasn't it? Yeah, was it the World Cup qualifier or the previous?
Well, we played in a friendly and in two qualifiers.
Right. So for the World Cup just gone, England won their group, and it was only Montenegro. Was it Montenegro?
Yeah, I think
that chased the only ones that put any resistance out in that group. Because Montenegro were leading the group for a while.
And I'm pretty sure, which again maybe sort of undermines the whole sort of pot this, pot that argument, I think they were drawn from pot six for that because they were just so new. They just didn't have the ranking points to put them anywhere else. Or might even when we had them, they were pot six. I can't remember now, but...
I think they were.
I think it was
us. Yeah, there you go, wasn't England. It was us.
There's a beautiful solution, mine, I think I saw on the message board, which is we just kind of bring on a seventh sub. Play Northern Ireland, bring on too many subs, won't count as a proper...
FIFA won't recognise
FIFA friendly. So we get the
game. There you go, problem solved.
There we are. And all we have to do is beat Belgium. Easy.
We call it B game.
Yeah.
Or you get, is it 5 players sent off? You go below 7 players.
And the game has to be abandoned, is it?
And the red cards in friendlies, but do they... They don't matter, do they, surely?
There'd be some, if it says, there'd be some kind of special FIFA hearing, wouldn't there?
Absolutely.
They'd all get banned for the next 7
should we be playing this game in crew? But Northern Ireland in crew. That's what you want. That's where we ought to be playing it.
And that's it. You know, I joke about five red cards. Us in Northern Ireland actually have previous about bringing lots of red cards.
It's
so
true.
It's not completely unheard of or beyond the realms.
Who was
of,
the guy in Northern Ireland when he got sent? He scored against us and he did a gesture at the crowd.
Was
it?
It was Healy.
It was Healy, was it? Yeah. And he got sent off, didn't he? Straight off.
And the way we were defending that night, he'd have probably, and the way he was scoring for Northern Ireland, he'd probably fancy his chances on getting a couple more. Remarkable game. The only thing popped in my head just a moment ago that I think happened since we last spoke is Rob Earnshaw retired. Anyone like to say some words? He hasn't died, he's just retired, but I mean, is anybody...
Well, to be fair, James Collins has now overtaken him for the worst open goal miss.
Well, so, I'm not too sure about that. I was looking at it the other day, actually. I'm
sure a lot of people listening would have watched the winner against Germany and the hat-trick against Scotland.
And
it's a career in itself, isn't it?
I'm sure this is true. I might be wrong. Earnshaw scored a hat-trick in every division of the Football League, the League Cup, the FA Cup, and at international level, and he's the only player in history to have ever done that.
True.
That is an extraordinary achievement.
I did find it quite curious that he retired. It was just...
He's playing out in Canada.
But I still don't... Why would he think he'd need to retire? I mean, he's not going to get picked. It's just a really odd thing.
It must be a bit of a knowing... knowing thing, wasn't
I'm just not sure why he was, what the kind of, what he was expecting from that.
I thought exactly the same. And did you read the actual statement he posted? I think it was on his Instagram site, sort of rather randomly.
Yeah, then he linked it
picture.
From his Twitter. Maybe he's trying to get some Insta followers.
It was really and genuinely heartfelt, and it made me feel a bit gooey inside, I've got to be honest. Given the way in which most players retire from Welsh duty in some sort of petulant strop,
was it a sense that...
Or at an airport or something... It was.
Was there a sense that up until very recently he'd been kind of?
I think he was
thinking that few injuries. I will get in one more squad. Yeah. That's the best.
He was coming
to
terms with his own mortality. Yeah. That's what it was. It's part of a bigger thing.
It will happen to us all.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he had just signed a new contract with Vancouver, and I wondered whether there was almost some sort of clause in it where they sort of said, "Well, look, okay, we can't have you just like going on, particularly because you're not playing very often." And I think it's almost 3 years since his last cap, so. I wonder whether it was some sort of perhaps contractual obligation on his part to have to kind of come out and make a statement. But if you haven't, if you go onto his Instagram site and you find the actual quote, and there's a picture of him in a Welsh kit, it will make you feel good inside.
Is he the last hat trick Wales had?
I think he's the only one since about
Ian Rush against the Faroe Islands.
Yeah,
in 92, it was the early part of the campaign. For the 94 World Cup, and Ian Rush's hat-trick would have been the first one, possibly, since the 70s.
Yeah, somebody rather random scores 4 against Malta, and I can't think of the name.
Is there like a random
Ian
one?
Ian Edwards or something like that? Is it Ian Edwards? Somebody scores 4, yeah.
When what, in the 70s or the early 80s or something, was it?
79, 80, something like that, 81.
Right, like a random one. Well,
I don't think we have that.
They don't crop up very often, do they? So
not on that basis.
He got a hat trick at every level.
Yeah.
Which no one else has ever done.
I think that might be our most self indulgent podcast segment so far.
And that's saying something. Wrap it up there. Nice one. Okay, cheers, fellas.
Good.